You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk iZombie Season 1, Episode 8, Dead Air. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
I really need to get a sound effect for that so we don't have to keep doing that. Because every time we do that, it doesn't sound like how it's supposed to sound. It doesn't sound menacing, it just sounds silly. But then again, we are silly.
We are. And the show is also quite silly, so it fits. It fits.
It fits. It does fit. Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm joined with my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hey, everybody.
How are things going in the future?
Well, future sucks, because I haven't seen Avengers 2 yet, so it could be better. But that's going to be fixed pretty soon. Ask me after.
Okay. I'll ask you after when we do our Orphan Black podcast. Ho-ho. You are listening to the Orphan Black podcast too, aren't you? You should be, because you should be going over to iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice and subscribing to Sci-Fi for Chicks, because we would really like that and appreciate that. And of course, follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks, because we like having friends. Wait, no, you're not friends on there. You're
Look
followers.
Look at that smooth plug. Well done.
Trying to get some things out of the way. But of course, I'm blonde. By the time we get to the end of the episode, I'll forget that I already said it, and I'll say it again. So, sorry.
But still, this was a smooth plug. So, bravo to you.
It only took me a year. It only took me a year to get to this point. And of course, if you are a rant fan, make sure and check out our season finale podcast of Gotham, because you will so get your rant fix on that one.
Yeah. We don't hold back on that one. Well, we never hold back, but Gotham is especially prone to ranting podcasts.
It's a rant-worthy podcast. This podcast is, I think, a little bit more on the squee side.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Especially things on this episode. We do have the return of our title panels with some, like, Southern accents, London calling, you know, not super creative. Did you say brains? Breaking up is hard to do. My favorite ones were Le Petit Mort, which we all know what that one means.
Yeah.
And it started out very nicely with that. Electricity Killed the Radio Star, which, a little bit of trivia for you millennials that are listening out there, because hopefully we have millennials. That's a play on Video Killed the Radio Star, which was the very first music video to air on MTV back when they actually played music videos. way back in the day.
Good times.
And Jailhouse Rocked was our final one. I think that the person who wrote the previous episode, or the person who usually writes these title panels, is back from vacation. These didn't seem quite as intern-y.
Yeah.
But you disagreed, didn't you?
Yeah, I kind of do. It's like, if the writer who did the cards before last week is back from vacation, they still need to get in, you know, their head in the game and get back to the puns. Because while the cards didn't feel like the intern wrote them, pretty much like last week, they still lacked this, oh my god, the pun is killing me and I love it. So I miss the puns.
I liked Electricity Killed the Radio Star. I liked London Calling because it did play into what that particular scene was. Maybe they're still a little bit vacation brainy.
Yeah.
But it definitely was not the intern anymore.
Bring back the puns. Bring back the puns.
I'm sure the intern is doing as good a job as you can because you're unpaid. But, you know, we like it punny.
Bring back the puns. Much punnier. Hashtag bring back the puns. What? I watch it for the puns and naked people, but I watch it for the puns.
Well, you don't just watch it for the puns and the shirtless men. Which, by the way, only one in this episode come on, Robert Buckley. It was just because it was your birthday does not mean you get a pass. I don't care if the face is beaten up. The shirt can still come off. We did say this was sci-fi for chicks, yeah. Didn't we? The something else, come on, that we love is hashtag Ravi Rocks. I got to start here because that was last week when I gave you the teaser about what this episode was. It had the whole thing about Ravi's romantic entanglement. And we were just both kind of giggly. Hee-hee, Ravi. And we saw that as, which I love, because Ravi's going down for his friend. He's there to help his friend. And then Peyton comes in. Because she's also helping her friend, but she's being...
But she's better at it.
Walking in.
Peyton Charles, assistant district attorney. Do you notice anything missing with this paperwork? Save your eyes. It's missing a timestamp, which means the prisoner's being held in violation of habeas corpus statutes.
I could put the stamp on now.
Are you offering to commit forgery?
No.
Get him out. Now. And hope to hell he doesn't go to the press or sue. Because it'll be both our asses.
Oh, Ravi was being so nice, and she just comes in, assistant district attorney, and, you know, boom, 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 and there's no time stamp, and you better get him out here. How about 15 minutes? How about 5? Love Peyton in this, and I love the fact that her being like that gets Ravi going, huh, you're so cute. Sorry.
You're adorable, you know that.
I liked it. I thought it was really sweet because they had that little bit of flirting. They had the moment, as Ravi kept saying throughout the episode. I know a moment when I see a moment.
Yeah, I still want to take Liv's side on this. And I don't think the moment that he felt was actually the moment that she also felt. I mean, Peyton. Because if it was a moment, then she would remember who Ravi is when he called. But hey,
well,
she immediately connected the face to the British accent, which, by the way, the men who listen to our podcast, that's exactly how things happen. The moment we register, the guy has a British accent, the attractiveness scale immediately goes up for some reason. And for some reason, British accent is much more appealing than Australian. Or American for that reason. American accent is not that interesting. That was said by European, basically. I'm sorry, Heather.
That is totally untrue, because I've met a lot of European guys that are just like, hello, hello. Especially when I get tired and that Texan accent comes out. When I get tired. Okay, let's get back to Ravi and Peyton.
Yes, yes.
Because I like this. Okay, number one, we want to see more Peyton, because I really like Allie. What's her last name?
Michalka? I think that's how you pronounce it.
I like her. We've been talking about how we want more female characters on this, and we want Peyton to not just be reoccurring. We really want her to be there, because it makes sense with her being Liv's roommate that she would be there. I liked seeing her come in there and sticking up for her friend. Because she still loves Major and he's a good friend of hers. And even though she still thinks Liv should be with Major and not this British musician guy. Kind of missing a few things there, Peyton, on why she's with this British musician guy. But that's another story. I like seeing her as a caring friend, as a spitfire, as Ravi called her, you know, really coming in there and being this strong and forceful, but still having this vulnerable side. I think this was a good indication that maybe Peyton's going to move into a little bit more prominence in the series. Mm-hmm. Maybe, please, please.
Well, I know that technically we started this segment to talk about Ravi because hashtag Ravi rocks, but I have to point out the one thing that I took from that initial scene in the holding jail, whatever.
Waiting room area?
Yeah, whatever that thing was, where they met. I loved how comfortable Peyton was and how used she was to being in a position of authority. Like,
right, very much so.
This is me, what I tell goes, you know, I am the law, basically. You do what I say. And I will not wait 15 minutes. You can get 5, and that's only because I'm feeling generous.
Yeah, she wasn't kowtowing to that other woman.
Yeah, basically.
And not because it was another woman, but because this officer. How about this? This is how it goes here. Like Ravi was, you know, here's the procedures and I have to wait and I have to wait and I have to wait. And she's like, uh-uh, you're going to do what I say you're going to do because...
I mean, what I say goes. It was such an incredible thing. Because basically, by now we know that she embraced her lawyer side, her ADA side, and her career. Mm-hmm. And it suits her. I mean, I totally... Because you don't always believe when you get characters who's supposed to have authority and, you know, be those powerful, strong people. But I totally bought Peyton. You know?
Mm-hmm. So did I.
And that was such an incredible moment for me because, well, I'm used to Ali being in slightly different roles than, you know, ADAs who command respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing I saw her in was Hellcats, where she played a cheerleader.
Oh, yeah.
So that was that. Yeah, this episode, I totally bought that she's in charge. And she was, and I could tell that Ravi was smitten.
The thing I liked about that first meeting, too, was that he noticed her initially because she's hot. She is hot. I mean, it wasn't like this Ally McBeal, I have to wear super short skirts.
Mm.
You know, she looked very professional, but she looked incredibly attractive. And he noticed her for that. But the thing that put him over the edge in being interested was this confidence and that she had and this comfortableness and power that she had in what she was doing. And that he saw also that she was doing it because of Major, somebody else that he also cares about. Mm. That it wasn't just she's hot, so I'm drooling all over myself. That might have been what got him to look up from his highlights magazine. I love him doing the kids magazine. But the thing that I think got him really interested was her personality and the way she is. And that just makes me love Ravi all the more. I also love Ravi doing the whole thing, trying to get Liv to find out some of that information.
I had some business down at the courthouse and met your roommate, Peyton. Bit of a spitfire, isn't she?
Yeah.
Is she seeing anyone presently?
Probably. You're asking because you might want to ask her out?
For a moment there, I thought I might have to draw you a diagram.
Girls do this all the time, whether we should or shouldn't. Get our friend to find out, are they seeing somebody? Are they interested in somebody else? Do I have a chance? And he's doing the exact same thing. Liv, of course, is, which we'll get into in a moment, eating the brains of a relationship, quote-unquote, guru. And yet she's still a little clueless right there in the beginning. I love when he's like, I thought I was going to have to draw you a diagram. Yes, I want you to find out if she's seen anybody, if I have a chance. And it was just, it was really cute because he did keep trying to do that. And we had that scene. I like the fact that they are not afraid in the show to have friends have conflict and friends have these major disagreements.
Yeah.
That scene with Ravi and Liv, when she's basically trying to discourage him and he's saying, I'm a tall doctor with a British accent. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
That would
sign
get
me up.
To notice. I'm at least, you know, gonna ask you, sure, let's have a little bit more there. And she just keeps going on about things like psychoanalyzing him.
Straight talk. I don't think you and Peyton work. True, you like a challenge, and Peyton is certainly that, but she dates guys you'd find in the most eligible bachelors on the planet catalog, if such a thing existed.
And you don't think I'd be featured in the pages of Hunks Quarterly?
Ravi, she's a lawyer who looks like a Victoria's Secret model.
Liv, I'm a tall doctor with fantastic hair and a British accent, but to hear you tell it, she's out of my league. I mean, I don't even need to be this attractive. Just icing. You know, I rescind all inquiries into the subject. You know, I'm a grown man who knows a moment when he experiences one. Oh, and my distant parents, they're fairly certain I put the moon in the sky. This brain you're on, she's a bit of an arse. Thanks for the straight talk.
that line, I mean, the way he walked away when he says, my distant parents are fairly certain that I put the moon in the sky. The brain you're on is an ass. He knows where it's coming from, yeah. But he's still mad at her. And she sees that, okay, this is the brain I'm on, but I've just upset somebody that I don't want to upset. And I don't want it to be irretrievable that we can be our friends. I loved that scene.
Yeah.
I really did.
And moving slightly forward, I also enjoyed when Ravi finally called Peyton.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And she and Liv picked up and she hesitated. But then in the end, you know, did the right thing and gave the phone to Peyton. And even, you know, in the end, she said that, yeah, Peyton should go out with Ravi when Peyton asked her, which, by the way, it felt so natural because, yeah, it was so clear that Peyton's first concern was whether or not it would be weird for Liv, because Ravi is still her boss. Mm-hmm. And I liked how natural that final scene between them ended up being.
Yeah.
I think Liv was off the victim brain by that point. So it all worked out well in the end. And I'm happy for Ravi. At least he has one thing to look forward to.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more later. Mm. I'm really thinking that Liv is still figuring out how to do this, because before the series really started, that 6 months or 5 months of her being the undercover zombie, of not having anybody that she can rely on. So before Ravi, you know, that BR time before Ravi, when she could start being herself, she was just pretty much existing. So she was probably not really paying attention much to what was happening, because she's closing herself off to everybody. Now that she's opening herself up to her friends, to Ravi, to Clive, to Major and Peyton and Lowell and her mom, and, you know, I think the brains take over maybe a little bit more easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes her a while to really be able to separate. We saw this, I think, last week in Maternity Liv, that time to separate, oh, this is the brain. It's not me. So I need me now to be the top thing, you know? And I think at the end, when she had that moment, when he's calling and she sighs, like, that's when the brain was kind of saying, just hang up, just say no. And then that's when Liv came in and said, no, don't do that. Don't shut it off. Let them have that time. And when she came to that realization that she's not letting the brain take over what she's doing with her friends, that's, I love that smile she had on her face when she said, you should say yes. You know, he's a good guy and you should say yes and try it. Because I don't know that it was this fireworks moment that they had, but I think they did have one, because it's just, Peyton's probably heard the name Ravi, but she hasn't really seen him and she doesn't know where all the connections are. So it was when she puts the voice to the picture, I think then she's like, oh yeah. Cause she was like, it would be awkward to say yes. Right. But you're okay with it. Cause I kind of want to say yes. Cause he seems like a nice guy.
He's a tall doctor with an accent. Please.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how many guys she dates at the moment, and from what she said, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would say yes to Ravi. Come on.
Well, and he's got a beard. And for me, that's that nice trim beard. That's just a little extra bonus on top of the tall, dark, handsome doctor with a British accent. Ravi. We'll get back to Ravi at the end of the episode, because there's some other stuff that happened.
Yeah, but
let's not talk about that now.
You know, harsh.
I don't want to ruin that high right now. Let's move on to the other half of our roommates, the hashtag Rager roommate situation. Major is the whole reason that these two have come together. Major, this poor guy, is not faring too well. I mean, I think the makeup department is having a lot of fun, because they get to really try and cover up all that is Robert Buckley. You're not succeeding very well, because he's still very Robert Buckley. But Major is beaten to a bloody pulp. Oh, poor Major.
Yeah. And I loved how, when asked who did that, he replied, Sons of Anarchy.
I have a feeling people who are friends with social workers don't ask this question a lot, but who were you fighting with this week?
Sons of Anarchy, I think.
It was my own quiet amusement, because I used to watch Sons of Anarchy. I gave up before season 7 because there's only so much pain and torture my favorite characters can endure before I give up. Sons of Anarchy visited Major in jail. Yikes.
He's a really interesting character because he's a very much, I mean, he was portrayed in the very beginning as just so goody-two-shoes that it just almost made you sick. And I'm seeing so many different sides of him. The determination he has. I didn't realize he was still dating that girl. I can't remember her name now. They had the lunch date, and then she ends up breaking up with him because he's looking at brains on the internet. That is a little odd.
You have to admit, that's a pretty good reason.
Yeah, well, you stand me up for our lunch date to look at brains on there. I don't know. I'm seeing so many different sides. He cares so much. He's had all these things now happen to him. Things are opening up. That scene when Liv comes over and, okay, well, first off, since you were talking about the Sons of Anarchy, I personally like when he says, I can't talk about Fight Club. Crap. That was this humor that he has, this really dry humor that's in there. It's just so funny. It's this moments of levity that aren't these great big huge things. It's just part of his personality. I love how he delivers that. And that's when we find out all the sad things. I mean, he's been fired and the girl broke up with him. His ex-fiancee is moving on. I mean, he's really going into this low place.
Yeah.
And nobody believes him about this Julian DuPont, the brains, he's so upset about Jerome and Eddie and all this. And he's just getting more and more isolated. And I just feel so bad for Major.
You kind of admit with what Liv said when she found out that the girl broke up with Major. I mean, the only only reasons to break up with Major are being turned into a zombie and being actually dead. And you gotta...
Because he's perfect.
Yeah, he is pretty perfect. Like, so perfect that it's almost unreal. But to have this guy who's perfect... Not only personality-wise, but also the way he handles his relationships with, well, pretty much everybody. To have him get hit after hit after hit while he's trying to do the right thing. Watching him unravel as the episode progressed, it was, well, frankly, almost magical. 'Cause it was so... You would think that he was the one being turned into a zombie. Because even though the only major change, in his life was that his fiance broke up with him when Liv got turned into a zombie. But ever since then, it's like it's his life that's being turned into a nightmare and not Liv's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because she spent that 5 months or whatever being so isolated.
Yeah.
Isolating herself, but isolated. And now her world is opening up. And his is getting more isolated because he's on that, he's straddling those two worlds and not realizing that he's straddling this zombie world. He just thinks that people aren't seeing what he's seeing. And the fact that we have... Lieutenant Zombie covering up things, that's not helping on the police front because it's affecting Clive, so anything he can have there, and his ex-fiancee is now moving on with somebody else. Yeah. And even though he has Ravi and Peyton, it's still, you know, it's different for him. And when he says,
I need someone to believe me. I'd feel so much better if that someone was you.
You could see her wanting to, she knows what's happening and she wants to believe him, but she's saying,
well, she does.
No, you need to back off. Yeah, she does believe him, but she can't let him know how much she believes him because that would then open up this whole world to the whole zombie-ness. And so she's trying to protect him, not realizing that it really isn't. I mean, that leads us to that whole end scene with Major buying a gun.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's going with that. And it scares me and intrigues me. And here's this perfect guy who, like you said, is unraveling right before our eyes.
And just, you know, I honestly simply, it never occurred to me that the writers would go that way with Major. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we got at the beginning was a cookie cutter pretty boy, you know. We didn't mind when he was mm-hmm. shirtless. We still don't, but suddenly it's like Major, out of everybody else, despite how surreal that might sound, out of everybody else, Major, the normal guy, is the one who fell down the rabbit hole. Right. With no way of knowing what's happening. For those who listen to our Gotham podcast, we talked about Fish Mooney, played by Jada Pinkett Smith, and how she wasn't playing the game she should be playing because she didn't mm-hmm. know the rules. This is exactly what's happening to Major. He doesn't have the necessary information to make the right choices because he doesn't know that information is an option. That particular information that he desperately needs to link everything right. and explain everything, he doesn't even realize that's an option on the table. And there's nobody willing to tell him. So right now, out of everybody, Major currently is on the top of the list of people who will be exposed to zombies next and will maybe, probably, possibly have a life-threatening situation connected to zombies.
Right.
Because with that gun, I can bet you that he's going to seek out Julian Dupont and his gang of poorly named zombies and try to do something with it and find out more information about what happened to Jerome. And it's not going to end well.
He's the one that really has lost, I think, the most.
Mm.
Really, because he just keeps losing things. And even though he's gaining, that scene when Ravi and Peyton do break the news that Jerome and Eddie are dead, mm. that their bones were found and the DNA is confirmed and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, it's over now, but I know who killed them. It wasn't these psycho people. It's something else. And everything the cops say is a lie. So it's like he's becoming this conspiracy theory guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a case where he doesn't really have the theory, but he knows there's something else going on and nobody else is believing him because nobody wants to, or like in Ravi's case and Liv's case, they can't admit it. Or the lieutenant's case, he can't admit it. Like everybody is protecting that zombie secret or they don't know about it yet. And yeah, he's just really straddling that. And I think he's going to become more isolated and more unpredictable, and that scares me in the idea of, like you were saying, when he goes to these gang of poorly named zombies to avenge things. Because this is, I saw in those scene, that scene when he did go to that meeting, that social worker, that group meeting,
mm-hmm.
how he interacted with those other kids, how he cares, what he's doing, that this means something to him. And for him to be fired and to lose these kids that he cared about so much, it's breaking him.
Yeah.
And he's losing all of his support. I don't know where he's going to go. And it's interesting.
Mm.
It scares me in a, I'm really interested kind of a way. Because, yeah, he was all set to be this cookie cutter guy. He ain't.
Mm.
This is not a cookie cutter guy.
I can imagine how thrilled Robert Buckley is to get this role, because for reasons that I don't have time to explain, I'm pretty sure that when they were casting Major, he didn't know more about the role than ex-fiancé to a current zombie lead.
Perfect ex-fiancé.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's the whole thing, that's the only thing they told him. And to be cast as the perfect ex-fiancé, you know, And to get this kind of incredible, complex and emotional storyline, wow. I mean, congrats. And he is handling it so well. So well. I love him. Really. Really. Very much.
Someone else who is handling what could have been a very cookie cutter role and handling it really well. And he wasn't really a focus of this episode. But I like how they do go back and forth with bringing different people up to the foreground in this. But that is Clive, who is somebody who is also poorly named, but I think we're getting over it because we're really liking Clive.
Yeah.
And how they're fleshing him out. Something that I loved seeing in this episode is we're going through this crime as this radio personality has been electrocuted on air. That's very grisly. When they are talking, when they're doing some of that sleuthing, detective sleuthing there, and they're talking to Aaron Douglas, who played the brash other radio personality guy.
The a-hole.
A little side note on him. I know why he's taking those jobs, because he wants to stay in that area and he wants to do enough that he can, he said this actually to Khan, he wants to just do enough so that he can go in cons and talk to people, because that's what he really loves. He doesn't really love the work so much. He loves what happens after the work. So he's trying to do enough on that, because he was also on The Returned. He was just killed off. Sorry, spoiler. He was just killed off on The Returned. So he keeps doing just enough that he can stay in the public view and have fun talking with fans. He's really funny. Aww. If you ever get a chance to see him.
Okay. My little black heart just, you know, melted a little. That's adorable.
He's very much into the fans. He loves all the fans, and it just makes me love him all the more. And he's not at all like the character that he portrayed on this episode. But when Liv and Clive are talking with him, I love that moment when Clive can tell that she just had this little vision, just that little look.
The gasp.
And yeah, and how he reads her and how they're becoming friends, and they have that shorthand now of what's going on between them. Even so that even when he doesn't know she's on this brain and she's shrinking him, he's like, yeah. We're not going there. The private stuff stays private.
Yeah, this is not what we do.
I find it fascinating that we never talk about your love life.
Really? Because I find it non-negotiable. Boundaries, Liv.
Stressing of boundaries. One of several signs of a classic distancer. Pair that with avoiding discussions of deep feelings.
I'm going in now.
Pulling away when things get real.
Look, it's nice you want to get to know me.
Sending mixed signals.
What's going into you? You listen to Sasha's show for one day and now you think you're her?
Something like that.
I'm not the less gear real type anyway. That's the born vice, I should tell you.
Idealizing a past partner. You are so textbook. Seriously, you can stop talking right now. I know everything there is to know about you.
We don't do this. This is not us. Us is, I notice you have the vision and you're going to tell me that. You know what I think that is? Total setup for some really great Clive episodes. I think we're going to have. I think that was just a teaser of, okay. So when is the Clive personal stuff going?
That would be fun.
I love them. Oh, yeah. I love that I'm seeing that they're starting to develop a shorthand between each other. I think that's really cool.
What I enjoyed the most, I think, about that scene was how he just took it in stride, because Liv just threw this fact out, you know, that the a-hole was still sleeping with the victim, even though he was married. And Clive just went with it. Well, of course we knew that. Just, he picked up what Liv dropped and went with it. And once again, it shows how much their dynamic changed. It's not as emotional as it was last week due to different brains, basically. But they still are working so well together. I can't wait to see more of them, honestly. I'm not going to say like fungus, but Clive grew on me. And I suppose we can say that we will forgive you everything, including a stupid name, if you're awesome enough.
I think he's also becoming very comfortable in his character. I think Malcolm really is, he's found Clyde. Yeah. I think they've connected because he just seems so much more comfortable and everything seems supernatural. Sorry, another show.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean that. It's perfect. Very natural is kind of more what I meant.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Yes. I think that also leads to Ravi and Liv and Clive being a really great crime trio because he also didn't even bat an eye. Nobody, you know, I love when they're first investigating it and it's no accident. How it was rigged to, fry the Vic and Ravi's shocking. Like shocking. Too soon. I think that's a Ravi thing kind of throughout. Too soon. Cause wasn't that also in the, Sim Reaper episode 2?
Yeah. Too soon.
There's a couple of those that he did that. I think they're going to be a fun little trio in these crimes and they're all finding how they're meshing together. I just love it. So good job, Clive. Good job, Malcolm. We really like you.
We do.
Let's move on to Liv, the third part of our little crime trio, and the brain that she ate this week. I like, again, that they're not focusing on how she gets the brain. Like, it used to be this big thing of getting the brains, and now we have to saute the brains or whatever we're doing that eat. It's now down to just shorthand. We know. Here's her salad, or here's her noodles, or whatever. Eat, and boom. Yeah. Let's move into how the brain is affecting her.
I have to say, you know, as a side note, and digression, if you will, because it's a Sci-Fi for Me podcast, I keep wondering what it is they're using as brains, because I keep hoping it's marshmallows or something, because she keeps eating them and they all seem, you know, to be shaped the same way. And every time she eats something, I keep wondering if it's, you know, strawberry marshmallow that she just ate. But that's beside the point. It's just, a little...
Actually, digression. Well, I can tell you.
Do tell.
I can tell you. They're from... I don't know if this is the right way to pronounce it. They're made from... The edible ones are made from agar. I don't know if that's how to pronounce it. It's a coconut-flavored jelly-like substance. So it's like a jelly.
But coconut?
Coconut-flavored.
Couldn't they flavor it chocolate?
So our brains taste... Well, because then it wouldn't be... able to be the reddish pinkish.
Psh.
It would be chocolate covered.
Chocolate. Fine.
Oh, she should have chocolate covered brains.
Yes.
Oh, she should do that. Because you can also put hot spices in chocolate, like Mexican chocolate is spicy.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be little bonbons. Okay, CW writers and things. She needs to have some brain bonbons. And then like Peyton goes, oh, I want one. And she's like, no, don't eat the brain. Don't eat the bonbons.
That would be
hilarious. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, we've digressed.
Yes, we've digressed. Where was I?
But chocolate, the effects that chocolate have on you will lead into the effects that this brain has on her and somebody else that she's dealing with. So continue.
Yes. I have to say that out of all the brains we've seen so far, I think this one was the most normal one. I guess. She was a little...
You think?
You know, really? A-holey. You know, not very nice and straightforward. People don't really like it when you're straightforward and just don't concern yourself with social niceties when you tell them something. Like, for example, they're being idiots. And if I sound like I'm speaking from experience, it's because there is a certain possibility that I do speak from experience. Of dealing with people who do not take well to my personality, let's call it. So for me, it was like one of the normal brains, and it didn't have the same amusement effect, or it didn't have the same shock value like maternity leave or, you know, agoraphobic Liv or Liv speaking Romanian. It was like the most normal brain. And I found it refreshing because it was like, hey, let's do another shocking brain, you know, another shiny thing. It had its pros and cons, and watching Liv try to analyze everybody's love lives and, you know, say like it is without, you know, stopping to think how she sounds. It was a new thing for Liv, but it wasn't Liv trying to pet Ravi's hair or suddenly, you know, starting to paint. I liked it because it kind of cut down on the shocking value of, look, another brain.
I kind of disagree. I don't think it was, well, it's something that you do see, but I don't think it was as normal. I think you did have some of the shock value. I like Peyton talking about a size joke. Really? You've changed, you know, because this brain is much more comfortable talking about sex and relationships just out in the open. And that's not a live thing. But it is something where if you listen to some of these shows, you do start getting the sense. And I cannot imagine listening to 30 plus hours of relationship advice constantly. I did like her comment, though, that she was glad that she had that after that awkwardness between her and Ravi. That was, you know, a nice way of how it kind of got her through. I think that's when she started really realizing the effect the brain had. But as she's spewing out all this advice, as she's trying to analyze Clive, as she's doing that to Ravi, it's like, are you shrinking me? And all that, as she's being intrusive, because that's what this talk show host was intrusive. You're calling in for this. Well, you've now opened yourself up to that. You've given me the open door to delve in as much as you want. And so she was being very intrusive. I love the moment with her and Lowell when he's trying to, you know, get it on and have a little fun. And I have a feeling the woman whose brain you ate never had a healthy relationship.
Yeah, I liked that insight.
Love the defensiveness. How do you know it was a woman? Because it was, you know, at first I was like, hey, okay, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, okay, I can see
that. Yeah, that made sense.
It made total sense. So it's like, at first I was upset with Lowell for that comment, and then I'm like, no, okay, yeah, you're right. This is a brain that she's on that never has had a healthy relationship. And I think that helped Liv look at her relationship with Major, look at her relationship with Ravi, look at her relationship with Lowell and with she's looking at her relationships with all these people and seeing how they fit in. I thought it was really interesting because she was being very intrusive, but not physically. Like you said, she wasn't fixing Ravi's hair or doing something like that. It was all very trying to delve deeper than her friends really wanted her to. And Lowell's the only one that could really call her on it. And I love that because he's the only one that knows. Yeah, this isn't you. This is that brain.
Yeah. And I liked how he took it in stride. Like, what did you say she was an expert in? Relationships and sex. Let's explore that.
Well, and the fact that she's stressing about the fact that the friendship should be there first. Like it was with Major. And he's like, well, yeah, that's friendship is a foundation of like year two and further. I mean, you could tell Lowell is definitely more the hot passion first and friendship comes later.
I just finished dyeing my roots. We can't all pull off the ethereal thing about look. I'm not sure what you're up to, but it seems to involve spiraling.
We're not friends. Shouldn't friendship be the foundation of a relationship?
It should be the foundation of year two of a relationship and beyond, but right now, what I really want to do is spend epic amounts of time naked with you and the friendship will come.
Would we even be together if we weren't both zombies?
Probably not. My world was a music scene. You're an ER doctor. Suppose it could have OD'd. Would have been a hell of a meet cute. But what does it matter? Because here we are. Zombies. Together.
It matters.
It doesn't.
And I think that was also a nice way to differentiate between Major and Lowell. Not that one is right or wrong, that relationships do take different paths. And her relationship with Major was friends first and then lovers. And this one is, well, no, we're lovers who have those fun, depending on the brain you're on. Maybe we have that whole, marry, date, kill kind of thing.
Yeah.
which there's another word for it, but I can't say that because we're PG-13 on this podcast. I like that we do have that differentiation, because again, it's not Major and Lowell competing against each other, but it does put us in a place where, you know, maybe both Major and Lowell can answer the door without a shirt.
Yeah.
Because that was nice.
I'm pretty sure we're moving away from times when Major answered doors shirtless, because
no,
he's moving away from those days, and we will mourn those days and wear black in remembrance of it. And if you think I'm exaggerating, you're wrong.
I still think they're there. But the fact that both Major and Lowell are very upfront and honest with things. Mm. I love Lowell saying that, you know, she's spiraling. He can tell she's doing the brain spiral thing, that where the brain is taking over, and he gets it, but he's not freaking out about it. When she said, "Do you think that we'd be together if we weren't for zombies?" And he's like, "No, probably not. Because we wouldn't travel in those circles where, well, if I OD'd, came to the ER, maybe." He's just so pragmatic, but is ready for that. Well, I mean, we start the whole episode. Yeah, I'm liking Lowell more and more, because we're starting this whole episode in a very Jamie Frazier kind of way. See Alex's write-ups about Outlander.
In a good place.
Whew. Did you notice at the beginning of the episode for an albino zombie? She seemed to have a little bit extra color in her cheeks.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, if we're talking about the beginning of the episode, I have to go back all the way to the title card for that moment, La Petite Morte, which was amusing to me because, for once, you know, it described perfectly what we were saying, but it also made me remember that one of the first stories told about King Arthur was La Morte d'Arthur. Oh. And it made me remember Arthur Pendragon is playing a zombie and all that, and it was twice as funny to me because I'm easily amused and basically my brain works in mysterious ways. But yes, that was awesome. Watching a guy who, because that scene was purely about Liv's pleasure. And as
it made my feet tingle.
As PG-13.
My feet are clean and scrubbed and moisturized. Come on, my feet could use a little bit too.
No. But it was as PG-13 as you would get on CW, because they are capable of much more racy stuff. Especially people who watch Vampire Diaries. Like, it's almost softcore on there, but here it was so much, it was clear that they just finished having fun, but still it was, you know, about making Liv feel good, and you gotta hand it to Lowell, you know, even though they even though they wouldn't date if they weren't zombies, or they probably wouldn't even be friends. Once he's put in this relationship, he does very Jamie Frazier kind of stuff, and he's getting on top 5 TV boyfriends.
He's getting on top?
Well, no, because on top, Jamie Frazier TV is on top. But he's there, a runner-up or so.
That was another thing. Okay, well, let's moving away from sexual innuendos there.
Why would you want to move on?
Because I'm getting a little hot and bothered. We need to move on. Since you brought up the fact that it reminded you of Arthur, the whole Arthur Pendragon, King Arthur thing. I love the line, and I think the iZombie writers had a little bit of fun with this. When Lowell answers the door without his shirt, which that was a tweet that, thank you, writers. Thank you.
Him answering the door thankful.
With no shirt. I always take off my shirt to answer the thing. And then he's dyeing his roots. I love that. How he's a guy that has to dye his roots to keep his look. But he makes this comment of how we can't all pull off the ethereal Tinkerbell look. And that just made me giggle because she played Tinkerbell on Once Upon a Time.
Yes. It was like all the Superman jokes on Arrow and The Flash with Brandon Routh. I love it when writers make those little jokes that are only funny to people who've seen those actors in previous roles. Writers on Castle are incredibly good at that as well.
Yeah.
So the little
there's some great
Tinkerbell
ones.
Joke was, "Oh, sweetie, once again you have won my little black heart. It's yours if you want it."
I noticed that we basically skipped over pretty much the entire crime. The only thing I'll say about that is, at first I thought the producer was going to be like the whole lesbian type thing between her, like she was in love with this other woman, you know, the Sasha, the host, and that's why she was upset. And I kind of figured she was going to be the one that did the murder, because it reminded me of Clive doing the whole,
"It's always the wife.
If it's not the husband, it's the wife." Yeah, kind of thing. And but we'll just turn on the ear just to have her being jealous over the job.
But you gotta say, from what we heard of her, she really was terrible as a radio host.
She was awful. Ugh, she made me think about us, and like, do we sound like this? No, we have a lot more energy like this. And I guess this is also a reason why we're not a call-in show, because as far as we know, we're awesome.
Of course we're awesome. And if we were a call-in show, they would tell us we're awesome. Or else.
Or else we would sick Blaine on them. Let's go ahead and move into, we have the return of Team Zombie, or as they actually do say on the show, Team Z. Somebody's been listening to us. They've been listening to us. And that's when we do find out that our Captain Chief Zombie guy is actually Lieutenant.
Yeah.
So he's Lieutenant Zombie. I don't know what his name is, but I at least know his proper rank. I thought that was a brilliant return for Blaine, because we've had him basically in the last few episodes without him actually being in there. David Anders got a few weeks off, but his presence was still very much felt. And I thought this was a really great moment, because having Lieutenant Zombie basically not be okay with this anymore, because we were starting to really question, what is this guy? You know, is he somebody that we even want to care about? Is he nefarious? What side is he playing on? Because once we found out he was getting his brains, that he was a zombie, and we start figuring out he's probably covering for this, is he evil? Well, we see he's not. He just got caught up in that situation that, what do you do? And he's really under Blaine's thumb. You know, stop pretending you have options.
But
awesome.
Here's the thing.
Awesome Blaine evilness.
Lieutenant, sweetie, you do have options. Go talk to Liv and she will hook you up with brains from the morgue that will actually help you solve crimes.
And that makes it, you know, interesting, because maybe that is something that will happen. I mean, but I think I don't know how he changed, but being in that situation, I can see him not really knowing how else to do this. But now he does kind of know, because, you know, have Blaine saying how he doesn't have options, but maybe he will say he does have options, because he brings up Liv.
"There's a girl in the ME's office. Pale. Looks like she plays for Team Z."
"Yeah, I know all about her. She has her own special role in all this.
Would have been nice to get a heads up."
"I'm sorry, dear. You know how I struggle with my communication skills. Now, run off and do your job. Protect and serve. Me."
It made me scared when he said that Liv has a role to play. Yeah, I know about her. Liv has a role to play.
Yeah, and that's not freaking us out at all. We're calm and composed, and this is not freaking us out. Nope.
David Anders is just, despite the fact that he need such a better name for his character, I'm actually starting to get okay, though, with calling him Blaine, because the way he's playing it and the way they're setting up Blaine is just so evil. He's not evil. He's evil. He is an evil fiend. He doesn't need this huge presence. These two scenes that he had, which actually it was a scene and an appearance, were so incredibly wonderful and menacing that he's so deliciously evil. Since we just came off the Lowell and Liv thing, we have Liv opening up and again, how she does kind of at the end of every episode, let me take from this particular brain the positive stuff that I want to take and get rid of the other stuff and just keep becoming a better undead woman. She's just enjoying the moment. She's letting everybody do things. She's had this wonderful night, obviously, with Lowell, jealous as all get out. And she wakes up in the morning and he's playing the guitar and she has a little, you know, huevos rancheros, scrambled eggs and brain kind of thing. And then go, okay, I gotta go. Gotta get to work. Gotta do, everything's normal. Everything's happy. That moment when she saw, this episode really just ended with three, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God moments here. When she's in the elevator and she sees Blaine delivering brains, coming to the apartment she's leaving, she gets that flash of Jerome and realizes, oh my gosh, she just ate Jerome's brain.
Yeah.
I had to pause the TV and just go, wait a second, I gotta process first before I can even see the ending, which was like 10 seconds more. But oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
I know, I was like...
And he's coming right for her.
It's been a while since I had a shocker that made me go, oh my God. Pause, because, no, wait, all the implications of Lowell not getting his brains from a funeral home, but from Blaine. Mm-hmm. And that suggests that Blaine had something to do with Lowell changing into zombie, because so far he only supplies brains to people he had a hand in changing, basically, you know? Blaine created his own demand market. Mm-hmm. So he had to have something to do with Lowell's change. And, oh my God, Lowell ate Jerome! And that kind of, you know... And that begs the question whether or not... I hate even think about it, because... No. Okay. Allow me to calm myself down and present you with a theory that I really, really don't like. There is a chance... Okay. Well, now that we've seen that Blaine is supplying Lowell, and now that we've seen how Blaine orders people around... when we saw the scene with the lieutenant, there is a tiny little chance that Lowell's good dynamic with Liv doesn't really span from Lowell being a good guy, but from the fact that Lowell might be dating Liv because Blaine has plans for her and he needs an inside man.
Okay, I don't like this theory.
I told you I don't like this theory either. But it's a theory that like we you. Need to put on the table because it's a possibility. It will suck if it's the case. But...
Well, there is the possibility that he thinks that Blaine is actually just the delivery man from the funeral home.
Right. And we're buying that because we're idiots.
I know. Yeah. I'm just trying, because I'm like, it really was this boom, boom, like you said. It has the implications. She's about to run headlong into Blaine. In theory. I don't think so. The way they cut that with the door open and you see the shoulder, I don't think it'll actually be Blaine. I hope it's not Blaine, because that's a major confrontation. Yeah. But it could be. You never know. The show keeps surprising me. But she's got Blaine coming right for her. She sees the vision, so she knows that she just ate Jerome's brains. So what are the implications now with Major and everything there? And then, like you said, she now also knows that that's how Lowell is getting his brains. It's from her arch enemy, basically. Yeah, it just was a really interesting way that the writers have now looped so many people together that it makes sense, but I didn't see it coming because I honestly didn't give them credit for trying to interweave so many stories together, but still keep them separate And yeah, adding a complexity to Lowell's character right after we really got to a point where, yeah, this guy is, if it wasn't for the fact he was undead, he'd be perfect.
Yeah, he's a keeper. Maybe apparently not.
Of course, he is a musician, yeah. So.
There had to be something wrong with him.
I love musicians, don't get me wrong, but yeah. It was a great ending that just
and it left me
opens
speechless.
Up so many things.
You saw me just now losing my ability to speak English.
It opens doors, it opens windows, it opens attics, staircases, and crawl space holes. It's just, we can go so many places with that. And another place we can go with it, let's go ahead and wrap this up, is, well, how do we have a cure for this? Well, Ravi, of course, you know, Blaine wants more zombies so that he has more supply and demand and can be the head honcho, whereas we have Ravi trying to find a cure. And so he has his experiment, and they walk in. Okay, one of my favorite lines from this episode is when they go in and look at the rats and see all the dead rats, except for the one zombie rat that got away. Even the control rat got hit. The Lannisters send their regards.
Yeah.
Their brains are missing. Every one of them.
The Lannisters send their regards.
I actually reround it because I'm just like, that is... I love Liv even more now. Because she's a geek.
Yeah.
She's one of us. No wonder we love her
I
so
have
much.
To tell you, though, that whole scene, not only the Lannister comment, was my favorite purely because when I was watching it, I was watching it without headphones, as I usually watch shows in the house with my headphones on. But I didn't have my headphones on this time. And when that scene rolled up and started, and it had this whole Ravi freaking out because this rat has the potential to end civilization as we know it, and live, you know, basically playing with the rat. When she giggled, she had this little giggle. My mother, who wasn't watching with me, just, she was doing something in the room and just heard the giggle. It made her giggle as well. She had no idea what was going on, but when she heard that giggle, he was like, and I gotta say, I giggled as well. It was such an infectious giggle. Such a, you know, little thing, but it, you know, showed Liv in this cute, awesome light. Basically, it ended with me explaining everything about that scene to my mother so she could understand what the giggle was about.
Holy crap, Robbie, he's white and murderous. You did it. You made a zombie rat. Ooh, where are you going, little buddy?
I believe he was on his way to murder me and eat my brains. Why isn't he tearing into you?
Oh, it's a zombie thing. You wouldn't understand. Zombie brains are nasty. You wouldn't want those. No, you wouldn't. No.
That rat you're doting on, like a Persian chihuahua, could end civilization as we know it.
And suddenly it wasn't so funny for her anymore. I love that you made a zombie rat. We've got a cute little white rat, and she... We have some leftover from maternity leave because she's treated, oh, you're just so cute. You're just a cute little rat.
Yeah, look at you.
You're a little zombie. You wouldn't eat me because zombie brains are icky. It's a zombie thing you wouldn't understand. It's like, oh, you're so cute. Which begs the question. If it's a zombie thing, Ravi wouldn't understand, and this rat's not going to go for another zombie because zombie brains are icky. Why isn't Ravi having Liv help him with this experiment and be the one that gives the shots and things, because the zombie rat's not going to eat her. It wants Ravi. So at the end of the episode, why does Ravi think oyster gloves are going to protect
him? I know. It kind of freaked me out. On top of the freak out that I had with Blaine and Lowell, thank you very much, show. Oh, poor Ravi. And now we have to wait a week to find out if anything happens, when something happens, because something's going to happen, and it's not going to be sunshine and daisies anymore. And I am not strong enough to watch Ravi unravel. Major is enough. I need Ravi to be okay. And I need to hug him.
It's one of those things, too, because he just got the date with Peyton. So you get a good thing. Now we have what they call for the next week's episode, which is Patriot Brains. After a major twist, next week's iZombie has Ravi dealing with a few repercussions. Wonder what those could be. Meanwhile, Liv and Clive investigate the death of a former sniper, and Major continues to get closer to the truth behind Blaine's shop. Everybody is just really, this rabbit hole is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's a sinkhole. It's a disaster movie waiting to happen, and I'm loving it. I'm loving where this is going, because everybody is getting something good to do. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. And I have a feeling next week, if Major's getting closer to the truth behind Blaine's shop, I bet you Evan's already going to have the job.
Yeah.
Or going to be starting the job. And Major knows Evan, of course, so we're going to have some sort of connection there. So I just see everything weaving more and more and more, and that just has me very excited and scared.
I know. It's like CW once again struck gold with their mid-season replacement. Last season, they had incredible season one of The 100, which blew me away, and now iZombie. It's like, wow, I don't know who makes this decisions regarding TV shows at CW, but boy, they need a raise.
Do we know, has iZombie been picked up for a season two?
I haven't heard anything, but then again, they're going to hold off on picking it up until after May sweeps. So we will probably hear something in the next 2 weeks or so.
Okay. I hope so, because... Oh, yeah, me too. Although I can see where they're going. If they had enough ahead, you could make this a contained episode, kind of like the TV show Awake. I don't know if you saw that with Jason Isaacs, where they at least got enough notice where they ended the story. So it didn't end on this huge cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. It was a complete story, felt good. I could see where they could do that in the season. They still have enough episodes left. But knowing when they started filming this, I think they're going on such a great path. I really hope that they get to keep going on that path for season two. I'm really, whereas another show that we podcast on, Gotham, we're not necessarily excited about the season two. Although there's scenes that made us excited that if they went this way, maybe we'd watch season two. This is one I can tell you I definitely would watch season two.
I am not giving up on this show anytime soon. They have me hooked, and I have a feeling that's exactly how they want me.
Exactly. Okay, so this episode, Dead Air, on our Sci-Fi for Chicks iZombie hotness scale of chilies. Where does this one rate for you?
Oh, it was a difficult choice. Because plot-wise, I didn't honestly care about the plot much. And so plot-wise, it was a Cayenne for me, a 7. But the plot twists, after plot twist, after plot twist, those plot twists alone earned a really, really strong, weary, a 10. So, I suppose I could settle and average it out to more than Piri Piri, more than an 8, 8.5 maybe, if I had to average it out. Which I suppose I have to, because I forced you to make it a 1 point last week, so, you know. Yeah, I suppose it's a 8.5 on average. But the plot twists, oh god, 10 in a heart.
Those final moments did make me very weary. Mm. And I don't mean weary of what they were doing. I mean weary, 10. Those final moments were awesome. I'm rating it a solid habanero, a 9. Mm. Because kind of like that episode, I don't remember what it's called now, but the one with the Chinese gang plot line that we barely even touched on the crime on that one.
Yeah. The crime one.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't care. The crime live and let, was just let totally
Clive. Live and let Clive. That was the
thing. Yeah. Live and let the crime part was just totally incidental. It just got us to a few different places. The character development and the plot twists and the character interactions. Yeah. Habanero. Nice. All the way. It's getting hot in here. Lowell in those opening scenes. Mm. it's moving up the weary there. It was a really great episode. We'd love to hear what you thought about this episode and what pepper you would rate this. Please let us know on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can email us scififorchicks@scififorme.com or call the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. And as I said in the beginning of the episode, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice, because we want to feel the love. We want to be loved. And we want to know that you love us.
Yeah.
And even if you don't love us, go ahead and subscribe, and we won't know if you're listening or not.
Yeah.
Come on. Make sure also to go over to scififorme.com and check out everything over there, including Alex's reviews of Outlander, occasionally with an assist from Leslie. But definitely check those out. That's another really great show.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting a little hot and bothered again. Thank you so much, Alex. We will be back to talk Orphan Black in just a short time. And we will be back next week to talk more iZombie for Patriot Brains. It's been fun as usual. I'm hungry now.
Yeah, and that's...
I have a craving for something coconut.
When we say goodbye, listeners.
Goodbye. We'll see you next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.